You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Man, I love this song.
Isn't that Daft Punk?
Yeah, with Pharrell.
Dude, I love this song.
Me too. I like the beat.
It always reminds me, though, of like a strip club DJ.
Yeah, precisely. Do it, please. Do your DJ voice. Do it. Come on.
All right, guys. They don't work for us. They work for you. And Tippin's not a city in China. Don't be afraid to get up to the rail. Now's your chance to buy a private dance and come into the main stage, Sapphire.
I love it when you do that. It takes me back in time.
Reminds me of high school.
All right, let's stop screwing around. Let's start the show. Amigos, and thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale, as always. Mi amigo again joining me here today, Mr. Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? We're kind of jamming out here in the studio. I had to pipe down the music. But yeah, we were rocking out for about an hour in here, right?
We've been going at it hard today. Yeah. Sometimes we just get a little worked up. I mean, we just get the music gets flowing, and we have, you know what? That's what we need to do.
What's that?
It hit me right now. Folks, everybody... Look, and I don't mean like when I start talking about music, I don't want top 40 music. I don't want Nashville artist music and stuff. I want, like, Kyle and I listen to some real, like, local Texas artists and maybe not so well known music. If y'all have any of them that's maybe a local artist in y'all's area that you like, send us the links to that. Send us their names, maybe some songs for us to look up, stuff like that. I'd like to find some new music and stuff.
I enjoy it. I listen to all types of music.
Oh,
man.
I do too, man. I just started listening to Blackberry Smoke. I like those guys. I mean, you just find some different ones, like what Roadkill Ghost Choir. I'm a big fan of those guys. I mean, just little strange stuff like that you don't ever know. Yeah, y'all send us some of those. I would really be interested. And I don't care what country it's from. Bring it on. Let's find it.
I don't like dead quiet. I mean, almost all the time when I'm working, I always have music on in the background.
It's podcast or music. Yeah, I have to have something going on.
Yeah, I really enjoy it. Well, so what's new in your world?
Not much, man. Not much. Just I've been doing a lot of reading. I've got a reinvigor for more ancient history. I don't know what happened to me, but I've been going back over to why I don't know. You know, sometimes it just flares up. Yeah. You just, it's kind of like you get a little creative. I don't know what it is, but yeah, I just kind of got reinvigorated with ancient history search. So I've just been looking at all kinds of stuff and digging into stuff like that. I don't know why. I go through spells where 1 minute I'm looking at this, 1 minute I'm looking at that. But here, the last week or so has really, really been digging in on me. So I've just been reading a lot on that now. What about you?
Well, you know, just normal research and stuff. But I am a little saddened this week. There's been some deaths, man.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that for a second.
Yeah, that's not been cool, man. I'm a huge not fan of cancer.
Right.
I'm not happy about that. First of all, we lose David Bowie.
Yeah.
We've lost so many of them. Alan Rickman.
Yeah. Grizzly Adams.
Dude, yeah, man. Did you watch that show as a kid?
Yeah, I did.
That's one of the reasons it inspired me to grow a beard.
There wasn't that many shows on television to choose from. So, I mean, you know, it was a child family friendly show. I remember watching it. Yeah. I used to always think, like, how does he wrestle with that grizzly?
Yeah. With Ben.
Yeah.
Was it Gentle Ben? Isn't that what they called him?
Yeah.
Something along those lines. Yeah, it's just not cool. Lemmy. You know, we lost Lemmy of Motorhead. Ace of Spades. Right. The Ace of Spades.
I know. It's been a sad week.
I hate 2016 already.
Right.
Not happy with 2016.
Jeez. Well, let's move on to some more enlightening things and happier times in the news. Have you seen this? This was posted at Johns Hopkins University about how surgeons used a new technique to attach a thought-controlled robotic arm directly to an amputee's stump, giving him a far greater range of motion with the advanced prosthetic limb. Now, this is pretty cool. Now, the system involving an implant inserted into the bone at the end of the residual limb allows test patient Johnny Matheny to use the arm without constraining and sometimes uncomfortable harnesses he previously had to use when experimenting with the modular prosthetic limb, or MPL. He said, "It's all natural now. And after running this new test, it seems to be working great. There's nothing holding me down. Before, I had a limited range. I couldn't reach over my head or behind my back. But now, boom, all those limitations are gone." Now, Matheny, whose left arm was amputated in 2008 because of cancer, is a pioneer of advanced arm prosthetics. He was the first patient at Johns Hopkins Hospital to undergo targeted muscle reinnervation, which is a surgery that reassigns the nerves that once controlled the arm or hand. Now, that surgery is what makes it possible for him to use and control an advanced prosthetic device like the MPL, much as a non-amputee would use a normal arm. Now, the brain sends signals through his nerves to direct the movement. Now, the combination in Matheny of both the reinnervation and the implanted connection system is another first for the Revolutionizing Prosthetics Program, which is a Defense Department-funded effort led by the Applied Physics Laboratory, and their goal is to provide better functionality for soldiers as well as civilian amputees as well. Now, the socket, that's the really critical thing about this new thing, not just the fact that he can control it by just thinking. Basically, they put a chip in your brain, and then they do like that reinnervation they talk about where they connect the nerves to it.
That's crazy.
And when you think it works. But before, you know, they were saying, like with a lot of the prosthetics, is you always have this annoying harness, and a lot of people, if it doesn't fit exactly right, it causes problems. And even when it does fit perfectly, it's the heat and the sweating.
It's like an ill-fitting shoe. If it's not right, it's not right.
And imagine wearing a shoe without socks. So there's always like sweating and chafing, and the skin becomes irritated.
Yes.
So, you know, at night you have to take it off and let it breathe and stuff. This is totally different. They're sticking this thing in the bone. It comes out. It's a couple, you know, it's a couple week process. And then the hand or whatever attachment just direct connects to it.
So he could have like different attachments maybe for it.
Yeah, and they're saying that, you know, yeah, right cool now they've only done an arm and a hand, but they're thinking of being able to do it with legs.
Imagine if you could build like I'm thinking of like doing a job of, I don't know, you pick any job. What if you had a back
welder
and you could change it? Well, even like that, but I'm thinking of even like sockets, kind of like an impact wrench, but it mounted to your hand, and then the backpack maybe is what controlled the power of it, of course, and then you just was...
Like you have like a pneumatic
hand.
Air compressor built onto your back?
Yeah, just you just had like a riveter on your arm. How crazy would that
changing
be?
Changing tires at a NASCAR event?
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Dude, that's awesome, right?
Yeah.
Or how long before you get them on your legs where you can run and then you like, and then it like boost jump. Boom! Like you're like jumping like a kangaroo or something. Long range jumping.
I think it's coming.
That would be awesome. I wonder if you could do, let me ask you this, Cal. You think you could nap some flint with that hand? You think you could make some, like we discussed before, you think you could make some little arrowheads or something with it?
I'm sure you could with practice. I think you could do anything you can do with a normal hand.
Well, get a load of this. If we're going to be talking about stone tools, I thought you'd get a kick out of this. Off the National Geographic. Stone tools, they say, point to a mysterious neighbor to what you and I really love to look into, the Flores Hobbit.
Oh, yeah?
They think that they found Stone Age tools, or sharp edge stones, basically, that were made at least 60,000 years before. Now, before modern humans reached the islands of Sulawesi.
That's cool.
Now, they have, of course, no idea who made them yet. Now, they found these stone tools on the Indonesian island of Sulawesi, and they think it predates the arrival, or they know it predates the arrival of modern humans to that area by more than 60,000 years. But like I said, they don't know who made them. Now, this was announced this past Wednesday in Nature, and they are saying they're most likely between 118,000 and 194,000 years old, though some may be even older. Now, they say these keen-edged flakes of stone were excavated from an ancient river floodplain there in the southwest part of Sulawesi.
And they know that they're man-made.
Mm-hmm. They do, yeah. They say that they even bear telltale signs of being hammered into shape.
Man, that's
so, like,
cool.
We're talking about the flaking and the flaking off and pressure flaking. They say that that today's best evidence indicates that modern Homo sapiens didn't arrive on the neighboring islands until about 50,000 years ago, well after what they say these mysterious tool makers, well after they left behind these tools, which is really, really strange because it indicates that something earlier was there, but an earlier form of human was successfully traversing the South Pacific island networks way before they ever thought that it was possible.
And they were there before the hobbits were there.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Well, we don't know if they were there before the hobbits or if this maybe was part of the hobbit family, but we know they were there before modern Homo sapien.
That's
what they're getting at right now.
That's pretty cool.
There's a bunch of crazy stuff. Like I said, folks, look into this. Of course, the hobbits, we've discussed it. That's a really fascinating thing. What do they think that they were around here just no more than 13,000 years ago?
Yeah, very recent.
But that right there is pretty wild. I mean, that's an old course. Now, here's another thing, too. This is all, you can read through some of this. A lot of this is, you can't date rock. So they don't really know, you know, they're going off the layering of the flooding of the area, all that stuff. I'm sure there's a give or take one way or the other. You know, you can't nail it down to go, this is exactly when these were made. There's no way of truly knowing that. Like anything else, but this is speculation done by professionals, you know. But
right, yeah.
We don't know, but still, it's a very interesting thing. Even if they were there 10,000 years before Homo sapiens, even if they were there 1,000 years before they found anything that connects Homo sapiens to that area, 100 years before, that's still fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, these were advanced cultures. They were able and knew how to knack mm-hmm. flint and make tools and knives and spears and stuff. I mean, so they were doing that.
Yes.
Very, very interesting. Now, on Thursday's show, last Thursday's, for you non-elite members, I did a story in the news about this fungus that has been going around killing all of the bananas throughout the world. And it's pretty scary. But now it turns out, I just found another article, that something is killing all of America's oranges.
Oh, great. So now you got fungus on your banana. You definitely don't want fungus to drop down to your oranges.
That's right. Well, these apparently are only affecting America, where the banana famine is destroying the whole world's production. Now, they says in this article that oranges, of course, are America's number one fruit. But in the last few years, a mysterious die-off has been hitting the groves, and it's starting to spread very
fast.
Whoa,
whoa, whoa, whoa, whoa, whoa, whoa. Oranges are America's number one fruit?
That's what it says.
I thought America was all about apple pie, baby. I thought it was all apples.
No, it's oranges.
It's oranges, huh? I like pulpy orange juice. All right, I'm down. Let's go.
The latest numbers on American orange production are out from the National Agricultural Statistics Service, and the news is not good for breakfast or vitamin C fans. Since 2012, more than a third of all American oranges have died out. Can you believe that? And the numbers are getting even grimmer. If you look at just Florida alone, it's lost about half of its crop since 2012.
That's Kevy Kev's fault.
Right? They say, like diamonds and IPAs and coffees and steak before them, oranges are another casualty of this drought, they believe. But it isn't only the drought. It says the drought isn't the biggest problem. It's the fast-spreading, fatal, and incurable disease called citrus greening that's sweeping through orange orchards. The disease first showed up in Florida all the way back in 1998, and it simply is spreading from orange to orange. Now, oranges are America, it says again, are America's most consumed fruit. Now, they say largely thankful to orange juice. They're also remarkably hardy. When it comes to fresh fruit. So traveling, they're very, you know, you can carry them with you. They're easy to travel. You don't have to put them in a cage. Mm-hmm. You know, all the reasons. But it seems like this disease, it's worsening. And it's really devastating these citrus farmers' farms. And they're working on it, but they're not even sure exactly how to stop it. So pretty scary. Much like the story I talked about on Thursday about the bananas. You know, apparently there was a species of banana that was way more popular than the one we eat now that is completely gone off the planet. That doesn't exist anymore.
It's terrible.
And they're thinking that could happen again. Now, it doesn't say that the oranges will be gone forever or anything like that, but they're definitely having problems. So it's pretty scary. They said the problems are not just in Florida, but they're also in California and other places that seem to grow oranges here in the United States. So pretty scary. I hope nothing happens. I love a good, you know, what's my favorite orange juice? Simply Best, I think it's called.
The real pulpy. You're a pulpy orange juice kind of guy, aren't you?
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, I like to chew my orange juice.
My wife does not like it.
Neither does mine. Yeah, because they're weak.
I don't know. I'm like, you eat oranges, right? So, like, you don't like chewing the orange?
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
It's the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and that is a, how about DARPA quit working on all these robots? Let's work about curing all these oranges. And how about bringing back all this fruit? Instead of bringing back woolly mammoths, let's bring back some of this cool fruit.
Exactly.
How awesome would that be to where you've had, this is a new species of banana that's been, you know, gone for 400 years. Now we get to try it. How awesome would that be? That's when I'm for GMO. How about that? I'm for it whenever we can bring back old, gone bananas.
Yeah. Well, typically, I mean, I buy most of my fruit and vegetables from, like, local farms.
The farmer market here. We go to the farmer's market all the time.
I know they're twice to three times as expensive, but there's a huge difference in taste. I mean, have you bought a tomato from, like, a commercial grocery store, like Walmart or something?
I mean,
no flavor.
I haven't bought fruits and vegetables from a commercial store like that in probably 5 years. Because my wife's office is right next to our farmer's market. So she goes every day. She goes and takes her lunch and goes and takes a walk right there next door and goes through it, knows them all by name, go down there. It's like she works there, and she just grabs it. So everything we get's always right there.
They have no flavor, man. None of them.
It's not surprising.
It's terrible.
It's not surprising. Kyle, if I was to remind you of Raymondville, folks, you're going to get a kick out of this. Raymondville, deep South Texas, folks. Deep, deep South Texas. When I say that, I'm talking about down near Brownsville, Harlingen, which Harlingen's about an hour north of South Padre Island. But you're talking about Brownsville, and right across the border is Matamoros. We're talking about down around Raymondville. I don't know if you're aware of this, Kyle, but this is, you could say the month, but basically, this is the 40th anniversary of the Big Bird sighting down there in Raymondville, here in Tejas.
Really?
Yeah, and I'm going to talk about
that. I was not aware of that.
Yeah, this is pretty cool. It actually took place in 1976, when the residents of the Rio Grande Valley, which is what we call this area down around Raymondville, I think it's actually been called the Gate to the Valley down in there, but they were seeing what they described as huge ape-faced winged creatures, and even some of these eyewitnesses reported that it had two, like, blood red or glowing red eyes. Some of them even said that they were, you know, that they walked around, they didn't really fly, and they were like giant monstrous birds. Now, there were several researchers that looked into this at the time, and they had even found some three-toed tracks. Some of these tracks was found by a fellow named Tom Walden, and he measured them. They were 8 inches across, and they were in the ground near Hardigan there on January 2nd of 1976. Now, the first sighting of that creature, like we said, would become known as Big Bird, and it was January 1st of 76, and there was an 11-year-old named Tracy Lawson. And her 14-year-old cousin was named Jackie Davies. And they saw this while playing in Tracy's backyard there in Harlingen, Texas. Now, the two girls, this is what they claim, that they saw this creature. And it was standing about 300 foot away in an irrigation channel there. And, of course, you know, Tracy was freaked out, but she went inside and got her binoculars. Little girl, you know, she goes in there. She's 11, goes, grabs her binoculars. She comes back out. She starts looking. She didn't see the large bird at the time, but she said she saw a mysterious monster staring back at her.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
And now, of course, her parents, you know, they were like, whatever. They were kind of skeptical of what they said or what she had seen. Then early in the mornings there in San Benito, Texas, there was a police officer named Arturo Padilla. And this is on January 7th. And he actually saw something in the headlights of his car. And he said it was a really big bird. He thought it was around 5 feet in height, is what he said. But this is what's wild, 12-foot wingspan.
Mm.
Now, he had a friend of his that was another officer there. He reported seeing the same thing. His name is Homer Galvan. But he said this. He said that all he could see was it was in the sky. It was a giant. He said it was a winged creature. But he could just see the outline, like the silhouette, you know, up there.
Right.
Now, you start looking around there. There was another fellow that said he saw it, said they were fishing. There was a fellow named Ricardo. Now I'm talking Brazilian. Ricardo and his uncle were there, and they were on the banks of the Rio, and then they were fishing. And they said that that's whenever they had claimed that they had seen this thing had giant, big eyes, a long, skinny nose, and it resembled what they claimed was a big bat. So now we've got three different descriptions.
Multiple witnesses all 40 years ago.
Yes.
In the same area.
In the same area.
I think into the things like on the show The Dark Crystal.
There, yeah, you're right. Kind of something along
that's
those lines.
That's what I picture in my
mind.
But
you see, each one of them it's got some things that are similar and then some things that aren't similar, that they're seeing different things. The very next day after all this went down, the Brownsville Herald, the local newspaper, of course, it runs the story about the uncle and the nephew, and it talks about this and even quotes the uncle. And he was saying, "I was scared. It's got wings like a bird, but it's not a bird. That animal is not of this world," is what he went on to say. Now, on January 14th of 76, Armando Grimaldo, and he's a Raymondville resident there, he claimed to have an encounter that was pretty wild. Now, according to Armando, he heard a loud flapping sound, like you would expect from wings.
Right.
He said, but also he heard an odd whistling noise while he was outside. He was walking around. He heard it. He's like, what? He looks up. And he said he sees a large pair of talon-like claws coming. They grab into his shoulder, tore into his shirt, and then bounced him off the ground.
Really?
Yeah. Now, he, of course, gets up to his feet, runs, dives over by a tree, gets down. Neighbors in that area, they start hearing him screaming, right? They hear all this yelling going on. Like, what the heck? Well, the neighbors went on to report that they had found him in his backyard, that he was shaking and screaming, and that his jacket was actually torn and his shirt.
No way.
Yeah. And this is what he described that came after him, a gorilla-faced creature with leathery, bat-like skin.
Man, what could that be?
What would that, exactly.
How do you mistake that for anything?
And then he's been mauled by something. Something's grabbed him, right?
You can't just say, well, a barn owl must have swooped down and grabbed him, right?
Yeah, yeah. What is that? Now you go on. There were some teachers in San Antonio saw it in February of 76. And they were from San Antonio. They were in Harlingen.
San Antonio for your non-Texans.
Yeah, San Antonio, yeah. My bad. And then they were in Harlingen when they found it, or when they saw it. They were from San Antonio when they saw it. And they all said that it looked like a pterosaur, is what they saw. So it's not a bird, it's not a bat. Now they're talking about a pterosaur sighting, stuff like that. Here's a pretty wild thing. Some local radio stations in the area, of course, they jumped on it and went crazy. They started offering rewards for the capture of this thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Now here's where it gets kind of crazy, of course, like any local news. They start showing video of what they believe was like a herring. They said it wasn't that big. It was like a little old bitty bird. And they said, they're trying to sensationalize this. Even back then, they were trying to do it. And hell, it was even on the Tonight Show back then. Johnny Carson even actually talked about these sightings, making fun of them and going on. It was even so much so that the Texas Parks and Wildlife had to actually issue a statement talking about that these birds, whatever they were protected by state and federal law. This is what was released. We have a number of species of birds that do exist in South Texas in the Valley area. Many of them have wingspans up to perhaps 10 feet or in excess of 10 feet, and some of them are on the rare endangered species list. The punishment for catching a protected bird could cost a hunter $5,000.
Yeah, but do any of these protected birds look like they have the face of a monkey and attack people?
Not that I've seen. I've seen a lot of birds 12 down
foot
here.
Wingspan?
No. Right? Yeah,
no,
exactly.
That's not what these people are seeing.
So they put, and I understand why, because there's a lot of blue herons down there. There's a lot of these different birds that were coming through there. They were even claiming that they believed that it was a jibberoo, I believe is what I had read at one time. And these birds are, they're large birds too. They come up from South and Central America.
Right.
And they came up and they were like, oh, these things have giant wingspans of close to 10 feet. So maybe they've come up here and it's come up and they found their way and all that stuff. Nothing ever really, they couldn't really, I would say, link what these local birds were to what these people were seeing. Now, there was a fellow named Alex, and he claims that he had the sighting of the big bird, Resendez, Mr. Resendez. He says that he sighted it three times in the 70s. Now, the first two sightings, he said, was real quick glimpses of what he saw over Brownsville. But the third time, he says he saw it in broad daylight near his home there. And he said that the animal, now get a load of this, landed not far from him in a cow pasture. And in that cow pasture, over the time where these sightings were going on, there was numerous, what he said was, cattle mutilations.
Really?
Yeah. He describes it as having, look at a load of this, black eyes, very glassy, underscored by distinctive red markings. But he said the strangest thing on the whole thing was its beak. This is what he says. You have to look close because his beak is very transparent. If you see it real fast, you're going to think he ain't got no beak. I never seen a bird that big. He was brownish like dirt. He does not have long legs and does not stand like other birds. So he's saying that the beak is clear. So did it not have a monkey face? Did it have a clear beak and it looked like a monkey face. You know, it's got a beak, but if you took the beak off a bird, what would it look like?
Right. Yeah, that's a good question.
You know, so I don't know. Now, this is what he says. He estimates that this brown bird was only a little over 4 feet tall. And then, of course, it had landed over there with these cattle. He didn't get out there with the cattle and all this stuff. But he also said it appeared that it had blue and white stripes when it took flight, that it had short legs and a translucent beak. But what does that sound like? Well, when you start talking about the colors and the real light-colored beak, that starts sounding more and more like a heron or a stork or something along those lines. So I don't know what it was. Nobody's ever really nailed it down. There's too many of these crazy sightings that went on. I have no idea what it was. I don't think we'll ever know.
No.
Some of these sightings, it seems like people were wanting to see something. So then they saw a bird. Oh, there's a big bird. There's a big giant bird. I've seen it too. You know, I'm part of the cool club. Yeah. All that stuff. But some of these other sightings, like the people
that
were
fishing. There's always going to be one-uppers. I mean, anytime somebody sees a story of something.
You're right.
Or somebody accomplishes something or somebody does anything. There's always going to be other people in the town like, oh, yeah, my uncle did that. Or, oh, my brother's friend can do that in less time. Or,
exactly.
Oh, yeah, my neighbor, he saw the bird. You know that?
Yeah.
So, of course, a few of the stories are probably not true. But then there are some that you're like, why would somebody go out of their way to make it up?
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
Because they know people are going to make fun of them.
You would catch so much hell for telling these stories for people that didn't understand, you know, that just didn't understand anything that you were talking about. You're right. Is how much fun they would make of you and just the ostracizing you would get from people from telling them what you saw.
Yeah, I don't think it would be worth it. And it wasn't just seen in one town. I mean, it was all over that area of Texas during the 70s.
And even saying that, what we're talking about there, think of all the ones now that went unreported. People saw it and were just like, I'm not bringing that up.
I personally know people who have seen, you know, supposedly Sasquatch, but they've never told anybody.
Mm-hmm.
No, not publicly. They've told me privately, but because they don't want to jack with.
Well, and look at the number of reports that when we've talked to that one researcher friend of ours, that a lot of them I wish we could get our hands on because they would make some really interesting stories that have happened within 100 miles of here that nobody, like, you can't, you know, they don't want their names released or where it all happened, Rose and other stuff. There was some really interesting ones in that group, too.
I love those stories.
Yes.
Why don't we take a break? And when we get back from the break, let's get into some bizarre stories. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. I really like those stories, especially of the big birds. I don't know why, but I like the pterosaur sightings. You know, I've talked about it before on other shows. I'm not into the water cryptids for whatever reason.
Yeah.
I'm just not real big on the water cryptids. But when you were talking about people that we know that had strange encounters and they remained silent, of course, privately, but they want to air it or they don't let anybody know. They didn't call the newspaper to tell their story because they're afraid of being ridiculed. And it got me thinking about some other unusual stories. So I found an unusual story. This is pretty cool. Check this out. This is a reported Sasquatch encounter by a man named Don Young that he experienced, and it's pretty scary. I parked the truck at the Big Bog campsite and set up a small dome tent. I then started walking and scouting down a trail till I reached the old log trail that circles the waterfowl refuge. Halfway around, I found a well-used animal trail and I took a picture of it and continued on. About halfway around the refuge, I found another animal trail in a bottleneck that led to the water's edge. I followed it to the edge, and there was no tracks. Finally, I got to a creek and noticed that there were several cattails pulled up and flattened on the other side. So I took a picture. I walked all the way around it till I joined up with another road, and I followed that till I found the trail that went back to my truck and my campsite. In total, this was about a 3-mile hike, and it took me about 2 hours. I had a couple of Pop-Tarts and a Snickers bar as a snack, and I started to set up my game cams around my camp. I'm a big follower of Sasquatch, and I always wanted to capture one on film, and I'm also a hunter, so I usually go take my game cams and I'll set them up facing my camp whenever I go out in the woods. I set up two, facing in at the truck and at the tent, and three more facing away into the surrounding woods. I then threw out apples all around the camp area, and I put slices of fresh beef liver about every 20 feet in front of both cams facing the camp. I poured some honey in front of the other three cams and put black licorice on the honey. Since I planned on sleeping in the truck, I put a pheromone chip on a stick next to my small dome tent. Inside the tent, I put my sound recorder with sounds I recorded earlier at home, the sounds of snoring. When I was ready to go to sleep at night, my plan was to turn on the recorder and play the snoring sounds while I slept safely in my truck. A bluff tactic. After this was all done and ready, I sat down on my tailgate and ate a can of soup. When I was done eating, I tied a string about 10 foot to my belt loop. On the other end of the string, I tied a used tampon and a pheromone clip. My plan was simple. I have done this with tarsal glands and doe and heat during deer season. I leave a scent trail back to where I would want the deer to travel and go for a good gunshot. My plan this time was to go once again around the same route I took earlier, around the waterfowl refuge, straight back to my camp in a big loop that would lead whatever would follow straight into my camp trap. It was close to 6:30 p.m. now, so I put my pistol belt on and I grabbed my knife and a canteen and I headed on my way, dragging behind me the string with attachments. As I walked along, I would take out my canteen and pour a little water on the chip and tampon so it would leave a damp trail, and now and then I would step on them to soak a spot with the scent. Instead of going straight through and around the refuge as I did the first time, this time I went and checked out the walking bridge by the old clear cut and sat on the bridge for about an hour just listening to nature. It was totally still, not even a breeze, and off in the distance, I could hear a bunch of crows going off over something. It was starting to get late, and it would be dark soon, so I started back towards the trail around the refuge. When I got to the first animal trail, I watered down the tampon and chip and stepped the scent in, then watered them down again and continued on. The sun was down now, and only the sky was lighting my way as I passed by the bottleneck. I stopped to water the attachments and stepped them in again as I did before. Just then, I heard a branch snap back down the trail, about what I figured to be a couple of hundred yards. I moved out and started to hear moaning coming from down the trail. The moan sounded like, "Mwah!" I started to run, but it was getting hard to see. I pulled my knife and cut the string and threw it down the trail and climbed a small balsam tree. The tree was about 8 inches in diameter. I got up as far as I could, as far as the branches would allow, and wrapped my arm around the trunk and kept totally quiet. I could hear the moaning and the sound of steps coming closer down the trail. I then could hear it stop and the sound of breathing. Then steps again, getting closer. It was right under me on the trail. Then a loud moan and a snort of air, and it was shaking my tree. I couldn't see a thing. I was terrified. I could then hear it trying to climb my tree, and some branches were breaking. Then again, and again, and at one point it seemed to be right under my feet. I started to yell, "Get out of here!" And I drew my knife, and I tried to climb higher, but the branches were too small. The breathing seemed to be right under my feet, then crashing again down to the ground. Then in the distance down the trail, I heard a high-pitched whine like under me, it went silent. I stayed in the tree motionless, almost in tears from fear. After about an hour of not hearing anything below me, I slowly undid my pistol belt and wrapped it around the tree trunk and put my arm through it as a safety harness. I stayed in that tree all night. I did not come down until it was completely light out. My arm was numb. My left leg was in massive pain from the way it was bent. When I started down the tree, the branches about 4 feet below where I had been trapped had all been snapped off. I had to hang and drop at least 10 feet to the ground. I ran back to the main road and got on the trail, and to the camp. I got in my truck and I sped for home. I left the cameras and the tent there. I just wanted to go home. It was 8:30 a.m. when I finally got home, and at 1 p.m., I went back for the cameras and the tent. There were no pictures on the camp, and the camp was untouched. I decided that tomorrow, I'd come back armed and take pictures of the tree and look for tracks. I don't know what it was. It was big, and it was very determined to get to me in the tree. The next day, I went back to the tree. The first thing I noticed was there were no scratches or claw marks of any kind on the tree trunk. To me, this ruled out the possibility of it being a bear. Whenever in the past I watched or found a tree that a bear had climbed, it always left claw marks. I then started to take pictures of the tree from different angles before I approached it to look for hair or tracks. My next search was to go and look for the string with attachments that I threw. It was gone, nowhere to be found. However, about 75 yards from the tree was a very large patch of area laid flat, about 12 foot by 12 foot, like something was rolling around. So I took a picture and returned to the tree. I looked over the broken off branches on the ground for hair. Nothing. I moved the branches so I could check the ground for impressions or tracks. The ground was packed hard, so it was very difficult to tell if anything was there, and I couldn't see anything. Strong odor in the whole area, even on the tree that to me smelled like a wet dog. Also, the balsam scent was present, but the wet dog smell overpowered the balsam scent. The cherry tree that was next to the balsam was also broken down. This most likely was broke when I fell, when I dropped down from the branch of the tree. I went back to the campsite. The apples did not get touched. The liver was there, just covered in flies, and the licorice was also there. Now I started to follow the path I took when dragging the scent trail. Before I got to the trail leading around the waterfowl refuge, I found a fresh trail that was not there before. I believe that this is where it came from. I took a picture and continued on. After a while, I came to the bottleneck, and a bit farther, there was a tree. I made it to the main road and looked back. I could not help but feel disappointed that I found nothing. But then I thought, as I continued to the campsite, if it was easy, we would have found a Sasquatch years ago. I have no doubt that if the tree had been larger and the branches stronger, this thing would have made its way all the way up to me. I will do the scent trail tactic again, but with lessons learned, the next time I will place trail cams along the way as I drag the string and attachments. From what happened to me in the tree to my follow-up afterwards, I cannot say for sure what it was that tormented me. I would have to say that only by my life of watching black bears, that this was not a black bear. It did not make sounds that I was familiar with, or those that I'm familiar with a black bear. And because it left no marks on the tree, this is another reason I do not believe that it was a black bear. I have raised 2 black bears from cubs to adults, and I've watched hundreds of them in the wild. My experience says that it was not a black bear, but I also cannot say that it was a Bigfoot either. The whining howl that called off the attack, what was that? That wasn't a bear. It wasn't a coyote. It wasn't a wolf. It wasn't a mountain lion. I have no idea. My wife asked me, would I have been more scared if I could see it? And I told her no, because it's the same with the ocean. If you are in dark water and something bumps you and you can't see, you'll be more scared. But if you can see it, and you know what it is, then you can begin to prepare. So, Cam, what do you think of that story?
Not cool.
Right? It scared him up a tree. It treed him.
Yeah.
And I like his little story there at the end about the ocean. It made me think of you.
Oh, yeah.
That's why it was perfect.
Well, look, everyone that is a hunter and things like that, they know you have to be careful when you carry any kind of scent anywhere with you.
Yeah.
And maybe he wasn't so careful. If you got it on your hands, you got it on your clothes, you don't realize, just because you can't smell it doesn't mean it's not there. Also, too, it's just like whenever you get gas on your hand, then you don't smell the gas anymore. But then you walk by somebody like, who are you? You know, you get something on you, you don't smell it because you get, your olfactory senses get used to that smell.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's always there. It just blocks it out because it's right in front of you, so you just move on. You know, it's a way of a coping mechanism for your body. So maybe it was there and he just didn't notice it, but this creature did, whatever it was. I mean, it's one of those things, you realize how lucky you are at times because you're kind of like, ooh, you know, maybe. And I also like the fact he's like, you know, if they were easy to find, easy to catch, easy to kill, we'd have already done it. They're just not easy. I don't know. Could it have been a bear? Yeah, I guess it could have. He doesn't believe so. And this guy apparently seen a lot and done a lot with bear.
But he also says that he can't for sure say it was a Sasquatch either.
So exactly.
I do like his open mind.
Well, yeah.
Something
he doesn't know.
The tree. He's a lot like me. He didn't get out of that tree to the next day. He's like, I am not getting down.
Yeah, I'll just wait here till I get a little daylight where I can see some things, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah.
That's pretty scary. Wild.
I mean, when I read these stories like this, it always makes me wonder, because how many times have I been just bebopping around through the woods and something's been watching me and I had no clue?
Yeah. Well, yeah, you think about it all the time. I mean, you just like, you walk by stuff, even like rabbit, you know, you walk by and a rabbit run out in front of you, like, whoa, scares the hell out of you when it happens. I think about all the stuff that you walk by, because we don't have the senses, the acute senses, to really stay safe in the woods. You know, we have to use intellect and gadgets in order for us to stay safe, you know, because nothing out there is truly trying to get us. If there were things out there in North America truly trying to get us, we probably wouldn't win.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not going to happen. I've got you one. I want you to check this out, because you're talking about this, and we've been discussing this for a little while already, a few days, and I found this. This is a really interesting thing. This actually came from Washington State. Now, it took place in 1944. This comes from a man named George Brousseau, and he's talking about his grandfather, Elliot. And this, like I said, it took place in Washington in 1944 is where he was from. But he's talking about how his grandpa was talking about when the giants would come down and cross the border from Canada in late summer. Now, this is what his grandpa actually told him. This is how it goes. So his grandfather Elliot was on leave from the South Pacific, hunting with some old buddies for fresh meat, which was rationed during wartime. They hoped for a deer, but would settle for a rabbit or a couple of wood hens, whichever came first, when they happened on a terrible ruckus. They saw two big hairy males, each with their hands clasped together in club fashion, using them as weapons on one another, swinging their arms and clasp hands with full force, knocking the other down until both were on the ground trying to get to their feet. They were making groaning sounds, not screaming, just sounds of intense effort being launched at the other with each swing. The object of the disagreement appeared to be a dead deer, where at some point the bigger Sasquatch, approximately 7 foot or better, picked it up and swung the dead deer full force into the side of the face of the other hairy one, who was probably 6.5 feet tall, felling him to the ground. He didn't move. He laid there, his chest heaving. The other Bigfoot stared down at him for a few minutes, as if waiting for the fallen one to get up. Then, as the downed hairy one tried to get back to his feet, the winner took the deer and headed off into the trees. The dust settled, and the other one got to his feet and trailed after the other one. It was all over in a few minutes. Now, his grandfather went on to say that there were other stories from that area of the big hairy men, but none were so violent or as terrifying as what they watched right there.
That's crazy. He actually saw two Sasquatch fighting.
He claims in 1944, of course, you know, you go on leave. It's during the war. He goes on leave. He comes home. He's doing some hunting. And they come across that.
I've never heard of a single account of that ever happening before.
I've seen video, and this has nothing to do, but you see video of and I've watched elk fight personally.
Oh, yeah.
I've watched them fight in the mountains within 100 yards of them, watched them, and it's unbelievable what they'll tear up.
It makes sense. Yeah. I mean, male, you know, deer and male elk, like you're mentioning, and moose, I mean, they all fight.
Well, I've watched moose fight, and it's even more unbelievable. Then I've also watched, not personally, online, of course, and I've also online watched Alaskan brown bear fight, and that's unbelievable. I can't. It makes sense.
That if there's multiple male Sasquatches
fighting over food, maybe territory.
Territory, harem of, you know, girl Sasquatches. Yeah. I mean, you
your lady friends. Exactly.
That is crazy. I've never heard of something like
that. It's pretty wild, right? And the fact that they were holding their hands together. I'm picturing like the champion. I can, you raise your hands up, I'm doing it. You know, you're like you're pumping both hands together. I'm the champion.
No, I'm picturing like Gable grip.
Well, he was, but he's talking about swinging it. You couldn't hardly swing a Gable grip.
No, I thought you meant like them wrestling, grappling.
Yeah. Now, well, and that's what he said. They were clasping them together and swinging them like a hammer at each other, their hands, hitting each other with them like that.
Hammer
You're talking about taking them down, getting a good back, big back mount, get your hooks in?
Yeah, I'm talking about double legs, everything.
Little north-south choke.
That's what I'm picturing.
There you go. Maybe so. I don't know what kind of grapple they got. It'd be hard to get past that. Some Bigfoot guard. Uh-huh. They get them big feet in your hips. You're not getting past it.
No, right? Pretty interesting. Check out this story. This comes from Butts County, Georgia.
Isn't that where your mom's from?
No, I don't have any relatives from Georgia.
Big butts. Never mind. Go ahead.
This incident began in the fall of 2004, and it started out as hearing strange howling sounds in the evening. I never heard the vocalizations in the daytime. In the fall of 2004, some friends and I went camping on my driveway. It was the middle of October, and around 2 in the morning, and I began to hear a loud grunting sound and trees snapping. The noises were so loud that they woke me up. It was a full moon that night, and it was clear. And when I opened the window on the tent, I could not believe what I was seeing. I saw a large, dark figure with eyes that seemed to illuminate red in the moonlight. It was beating something in the head, which I found to be a deer come sunup. The creature drugged the deer up to the top of the hill, above the campsite. It walked up on top of some big rocks, and I could make it out perfectly. It appeared to be 8 to 10 feet tall, and it was covered in hair. The one friend, who stayed the evening, saw the exact same thing. I watched it eat the deer. It pulled off appendages like it was nothing. Shortly after, it started eating. It noticed our tent. It walked right down to the side of the tent, and the smell coming off of it was intensely musky. It knocked the frying pan out of the tree by the tent as it was walking by, and when it hit the ground, it ran back to the top of the hill. The deer carcass was gone, but hair and intestines were left behind. The liver, the spleen, the heart and lungs must have been eaten. We followed the drag marks from the carcass and found a mass of pine trees bent and broken in some form of a shelter. I have had many other encounters that I can share. They are real. They are here. I've had rocks thrown at me, and I've even been charged by one once. I barely got inside the house both times. They do not like light, and they do not like it if you shine a light directly at them. I say them, because on more than one occasion, my fiancé and I have heard at least 3. Hardwoods and swamps surround my house, and when this started, there were many subdivisions going in. I think the massive habitat loss actually drove them onto my property. There's also a 20,000-acre national forest that is squatchy as all get out about 7 miles from my home. The sounds are not as frequent now, but they can still be heard from time to time. I only hear them in the fall and winter, though. I'm also a hunter, and when I was hearing the squatches every night, there was not a deer to be found. When I did see deer, they seemed to be very jumpy. This was during archery season that I made these observations. Therefore, there were no gunshots occurring at the time. I promise you from the bottom of my heart that these are real. I've seen them in person more than once. If the wind is right, you know when they are close because you can smell them. So what do you think of that story? Again, kind of like yours, the other in your story, you whacked the other one with a deer.
Yeah.
This one, He wakes up and he can hear it's killed a deer and it's eating it.
They have to eat.
We've heard of them stories of killing pigs.
Yep.
Right?
Jumping on pigs, exactly.
I guess it's possible.
It has to be. I mean, they got to eat, and we know they're not just eating berries.
I love the stories. Don't get me wrong. I love the stories. This took place in Georgia, Butts County. I'm not exactly sure where that is. I have an uncle that lives in Atlanta. I don't know if this is anywhere near that. I do like the stories, but I do have to say, I do find it a little weird when somebody promises that they keep hearing them all the time in the same area. I'm like, look, I can see a one-off. It happened one time. Mm-hmm. You never saw it.
I know
it
where
again.
You're going.
But, yeah. You know, if it's happening all the time, I mean, I've read reports of people like, oh, yeah, they live on my property. I have a habituation site. They're living in the back. There's a family of them. Like, man, isn't it awfully convenient that people that have them on their property just so happen to not want to take any pictures of them?
Exactly.
I don't know. I mean, you know what? What am I supposed to? I mean, if he is hearing them all the night, why isn't he recording them? Because I'll tell you what, if I was on my deer lease or my property and I was hearing these things all the time, I would be calling everybody every night. Hey, look, dude, 5 nights in a row, I've heard them. You want to come over now?
Yeah.
I'd call the news, the Channel 11 news. Hey, look.
We've got a certain friend that actually has some night vision equipment.
Yeah.
And we could easily go, look, go bring that. Run over here. Let's grab some beer. Let's slip out there. We'll get up in something.
Wouldn't you try
let's
to
take
make
a look.
Every possible
I would.
Way to try to capture something?
I would try to get at least where I could see it myself. I want to see that. You know, you'd look and be like, that thing's huge.
Well, he
whatever
saw
we're
it.
Looking
He's
at.
Claiming that they're charging him. That they're out there. His fiance. Everybody's seen them and heard them, but, you know, they don't have one stitch of evidence.
Yes.
I find that a little bizarre.
It is a little
I'm
strange.
Not saying it's not real. A little bizarre.
Yes. Oh, I got you something here, Philly, that's a little bit, I guess, if you could say, a little more unnerving. This is going to be a little more unnerving. This actually comes. Now, look, guys, I don't know. This is one of those ones. You start looking around for stuff that this takes place with. When you start looking into, like, attack scenarios with Bigfoot, you don't ever really know what you're getting. It's kind of like all these claims that Bigfoot's been shot and killed, and you hear all these wild stories. Let me lay this one on you here. This took place in Bostic, North Carolina. And if anybody, you know, think about this, there's some Bostic, there's a Lincoln Center there, and there's some historians that think that Nancy Hanks, which was Abraham Lincoln's mother, you know, they say that she says that they think that he was born, that was Lincoln could have possibly been born there and then moved with Nancy. For those of you that don't know, Nancy Hanks, that's a long lost family member of Micah Hanks.
Probably is, right? Probably,
yeah, I don't know. I have no idea, folks. But no, seriously, they think, you know, there's all kinds of stuff. But anyway, Bostic's a small town there in Rutherford County, North Carolina. Now, this was said to have taken place on August 1st of 2009, and they think that it's either a Bigfoot or what they said was a swamp ape. Now, what happened, and this is what I found, it said is approximately 10 p.m., they were two teenage boys were attacked in the Puzzle Creek National Camp there at Bostic, North Carolina. And the local sheriff's department and U.S. Fish and Wildlife officials say that what they believe was a creature attacked, murdered, and carried the two boys off into the Puzzle Creek Swamp.
Hmm.
Despite a massive manhunt by 500 men and several packs of bloodhounds, the boys' bodies nor the creature that took them have been found. Over the past 50 years or more, people have reported seeing a creature that some call a Bigfoot and some people call a swamp ape in the Puzzle Creek National Park and the area that surrounded it. But the creature had never attacked humans that we know of until August 1st, 2009. Now, other people in the campground said that the two boys had been fishing on one of the lakes in the campground earlier that day, and they were said that they were throwing rocks at a large, hairy, swamp ape creature.
Yeah, don't throw rocks at them. Right. They're peaceful. You know, you've seen Harry and the Hendersons. Yeah. They're nice, unless you mess with them.
You tell me boys are throwing rocks at a Bigfoot. Come on,
I believe that. Yeah. Totally.
Says the people in the campground said at the time they thought the boys were making up stories, but then at about 10 p.m. that night, the creature came into the campground and attacked and supposedly murdered the two boys. They went on to say that the creature threw a teenage boy over each shoulder and ran back off into the swamp with them. Now, for the next 3 days, a massive manhunt for the boys or the creature was carried out. Nothing was found. Now, they did find some long black hair and sent it off for testing to see maybe what it came from. Says, although the search is still going on from the air by U.S. Fish and Game helicopters. Now, this was, of course, back whenever this was all published.
Right. Yeah.
The ground search had been called off and the campground in the Puzzle Creek National Park had been closed. Now, local police and officials of the U.S. Fish and Game Services say that the boys nor the creature might never be found. And that the Puzzle Creek Swamp is one of the most brushy, overgrown swamps. And it's almost impossible for a man to walk through most of those parts. Now, I don't know if there is any sort of validity to this story. Some people say it, you know, you start looking online, some say it's true, some say it's not. You get here, there, yonder. I didn't really dig and start going to look and try to get a hold of sheriff's departments. I didn't do all that stuff to try to see if there was any of this stuff was real or any of these accounts are real. If you want to, folks, I just think it's a hell of a story. Why would you make that story up?
Yeah.
Because here's what I want to know. Why would you make this up when you could easily contact the local sheriff's department to see if it's real? I could easily go right now, pull up their phone number, call them, and ask if that ever took place. It's just 2009.
Yeah.
That's it. You know, it's not that long ago. They would have it on record. Somebody would have a record of it somewhere. If two boys went missing, you could probably go in there and search into their newspaper clippings. You could probably go back into that. I mean, the most recent census of that town was from 2010, and it's a population of 386 people.
Oh, so it's what was that, Rutherford, did you say?
It's Bostick.
Oh, Bostick.
So it's in Rutherford County. I'm picturing a very, people very small, tight-knit community. You would know.
You know what, if you really wanted to get into a local story like that, and you're talking about a small town just like this, of course, it's only works at the small town. Where's the best place to call? Not the police station. Call like a barber shop.
Yeah.
They know what's going on in
the
town.
Call a local cafe.
Call the cafe or diner.
Yeah, call the cafe.
They'll know exactly what you're talking
They'd
about.
They'd be able to be like, yeah, I know the people that had that happen to them.
Yeah.
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 So maybe it is. I don't know, man. It's really interesting.
Pretty cool. Let's take a break, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. I enjoy the stories of Sasquatch. Cam, you said you had another interesting Sasquatch story before we wrap today's show up. Could you drop that on us?
Yeah,
knowledge.
It's not real long. It's kind of along those lines of what we just discussed. And it's the reason I was interested in it was because of the late Rich Grumley. Now, Rich was the former director of the California Bigfoot Organization, and he told some pretty cool stories. He was tied to one that come from Georgia where they was allegedly, when he was a kid, somebody had killed a Bigfoot and that he had seen it. And it was like its head was up against the truck, its feet was hanging across the back tailgate, something along those lines. I may be talking out my ass. I don't remember right now. You know, I'm kind of hazy with it. But I did find this, and this was Rich telling this story. Now, this comes from the Western Bigfoot Society newsletter, all right? Now, this comes from 1992. And this is actually what it says. It says, in 80 or 81, I was working, and I'm sure this is Rich telling this story. I was working as a security guard on a high-tension tower project here in California, and I met a man who was a cat skinner, which is operating a bulldozer, basically leveling off pads where each of these high-tension towers was to be placed. I noted he had on his pickup 20 to 30 decals from places where he had been hunting, and I introduced myself. And during the conversation, I mentioned Bigfoot, and he told me that in the mid to late 1970s, he was doing a little work for the forestry officials, and he had permission to be in a locked and gated area near Bishop, California, and that they had given him a key so he could go in there anytime he wanted. Basically, he was doing some hunting for them. So this particular time, the gate was still locked, as it always was, and he let himself in with his four-wheel drive pickup to the area known as Four Points. Says he drove over a hill, and there to his surprise were Department of the Interior vehicles and Bureau of Land Management men all in there, and he quotes Smokey the Bear outfits, with guns searching a campground, the hills, mountains, roads, etc. Says they grabbed this hunter, took his deer rifle away from him, and questioned him for 7 or 8 hours as to what he was doing there.
Hmm.
And I says the local forestry office identified him as a trusted friend, and he was let go, but told to never come back. Now, he had determined during his interrogation that the reason the BLM and Department of Interior were there in force was that a Bigfoot creature had gone through there the day before and torn up a campground. That it had turned over a large trash container, a dumpster, that no man could even begin to move, and that it had killed several people. Now, over the years, says the story was passed through several people, and in fact, quite a few Bigfoot researchers, but no one was able to come up with one single clue. And it goes here at the bottom, you're going to like this. It says, then in the early to middle 1990s, or I'm sorry, the early to middle 91, a young student also interested in investigating the Bigfoot mystery called the CBFO's hotline to tell me that he had heard that story several years ago, and it had always stuck with him. And he went on to relate that when he was doing some Bigfoot research in the town of Bishop, California, in that area in 89 or 90, he met a former policeman. who said that he was on the Bishop police force in the mid to late 70s. The student related the foregoing story of Bigfoot to the ex-police officer from Bishop, and he confirmed it. The officer said the story was the talk of the law enforcement agencies in the area at that time, but they were under very tight orders not to say anything about the incident and the related deaths.
Yeah, man, that's what always happens, right? These police forces from these little towns talk about, yeah, we knew about it, but we were told not to talk about it.
Yeah.
So you always hear. I was in the military. We were told not to talk about it.
So let's break this down. Could this be total BS? 100%. It could be nothing more than a great story told by somebody's friend that told another friend, and then that's just the way it grew. It would be easily done. Easily done. You would think that there would be some sort of way to look into this, that there would be some sort of paper trail for the BLM, especially now. Even with FOIA, you would think that we'd be able to FOIA some paperwork and find it. If somebody really wanted to dig into it, really wanted to take it for what it was, I would think that if someone was killed by, what were they telling these people? I'd like to know if there's bear attacks in that area. I'd like to look at that time in that area and look if there was any papers that put out a bear attack. A bear killed some people in a campground, and that's the way it was put off.
Yeah,
but
you're right.
You know, if that was there, then you could be like, well, maybe this story does have a little validity to it. I don't know. Either way, it's an interesting story either way. I don't like to think of them as, like we've talked about it before, I don't like to think of them as aggressive creatures. But if people always say what?
You're throwing rocks at them. Well, apparently they are.
They say, I couldn't shoot one because why? It was too human.
Yeah, that's what they say.
Look at what we're capable of. At the great grandiose art and love we're capable of, and then the terrible atrocities that we commit on each other.
Yeah.
So if that's a fact, and they're so much like us, they could do the same thing. You know, there's great ones and there's bad ones. That's going to be the same exact thing.
You're 100% right. I never even thought about it like that, but you're right. Yeah.
So that's the way I look, and I'm like, you know what? Maybe this is real. Maybe this is one of those things that it's almost too good to be true type feeling. Like, there's no way that really happened.
We talk about that all the time. When the story has too many details, that for some reason I think it's fake.
Maybe we just...
And I don't want to, but you just naturally like, man, I don't know.
Maybe I just don't want to think it's out there like that. But like I said, I have never had any dealing with anything like that.
No, I never have either.
But I know it's changed a lot of people, so I don't know. So anyway, that was just another cool story.
Pretty cool.
It would be interesting. Leave it with that. And I'd like to give a quick shout out to one of our Instagram buddies. He does some really cool cartooning and artwork. His name's George Coghill. Now, you can go to Coghill Cartooning. We're going to put the link up. He has a Kickstarter program that he's bringing up, too. And it's really interesting stuff. I mean, if you've got anybody that's interested in it, it's pretty neat because he actually has some merchandise. And like I said, the Kickstarter campaign goes along that. But he has some things now. If you go to his CoghillCartooning.com, and we'll have the links put up and all that, you can buy some stuff, and you may have some people in your life that love patches and love this, even children that want to get involved in all this. This stuff is great.
Pretty cool.
He has a thing called the Bigfoot Patrol, a Yeti Squad, and the Sasquatch Brigade. And you actually get like these, like they're embroidered patches.
I'm going to put one on my gi.
Dude, there you go. That's a heck of an idea. I think it's neat. I mean, I really get a kick out of all this. But he's got a new one coming up called Ghost Guard. And these patches, and these they're going to have like lapel pins and stuff, says that are going to be glow in the dark. So that's pretty awesome too.
Yeah, the Ghost Guard. Somebody's going to think I have some wicked guard I'm using on them, right?
Yeah. And he's got one that's already called like the Cryptid Command. And it's got all kinds of stuff. Like he's got alien themed stuff, all this. But it's really cool. The whole thing is really neat. It's fun. It puts a fun twist on it. If you carry a backpack, ladies, if you got purses, guys, if you just want to have something that nobody's got, check this dude out, man. It's really pretty cool. He has some cool stuff on Instagram, too.
That's awesome. I'll put links to it in the show notes. If you like today's stories and you'd like some more, this Thursday on Expanded Perspectives Elite, we're going to be getting into some more of these crazy cryptid stories. So make sure you sign up before then. It's easy to do. Go to expandedperspectives.com. Click on the Elite tab. Signing up is easy. There's also a section on the website called Frequently Asked Questions, and on there it has detailed instructions on how to sign up for Elite using a desktop, an iPad, an iPhone, an Android phone. Everything you need is there. $5 a month, you get a new episode every Thursday. Also, you get access to the entire back catalog, which is over 75 episodes now. So it's quite a deal. You can also call us, 817-945-3828. You can tell us your story. You can leave a message why others should be listening to Expanded Perspectives, and you might find yourself played during one of our breaks. You can also email us a story, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com, or you can just go to the website, expandedperspectives.com, and find the contact page on there, and you can send it to us that way. We appreciate the news, the stories, the links, and even your own experiences. We appreciate it all. Thank you for following us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and keeping up with the show. If you really like the show, you can always help us by rating and writing us a review on iTunes and just supporting what Expanded Perspectives does. Cam, I appreciate you. I appreciate your stories. I really had a good time getting into it today. But it's about time to get out of here. So everybody do not work too hard. And for you elite members, we'll be speaking to you on Thursday. For everybody else, take care. I'm Kyle Filson. He's Cam Hale. Peace.
Afternoon, we're going to let it all hang out. After midnight, we're gonna turn the love and shine. After midnight, we're gonna let it all hang out. After midnight, we're gonna turn the love and shine.